Okay, welcome along to Retro Asylum. You've got me, Matt, taking you through. And tonight, I've got with me Mike Rouse, head of production at Antstream Arcade. Mike's on to talk all things Antstream, but also introduce himself to the show, to you, the listeners. And we're going to talk about what Antstream is, what it means to the retro gaming community, what it means to the gaming community wider than the retro scene as well, and what plans there are in the future. So, Mike, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Great stuff. And so for the uninitiated amongst the listeners, what is Antstream?
Well, Antstream is essentially a retro gaming service that allows you to play almost thousands of retro games on your PC, on your mobile, on a ton of different devices, wherever you are in the world. And we build some unique things into these games, these old retro games. We build in challenges. So we take parts of the game and make challenges out of them. And we have global high score leaderboards as well.
Mm-hmm. And those challenges I'm going to touch on later, because I think they're really, well, they're very unique to you as a platform. And I'm interested in how you achieve it within the emulation layer as well. So
yeah,
that'll be really interesting. So you're relatively new to Antstream, 5-6 months old in Antstream. Who are you? Where have you come from, Mike?
So I've been in the games industry for about 20 years, more than 20 years now. And I actually come from a AAA games development background. So I started off at Sony PlayStation, worked my way up from a junior artist all the way up to the dev director of their London studio there. Then I was the studio director for a brand new Xbox studio, went on and worked for a partner studio with Ubisoft, 2K, and now on to Antstream. So for the longest time in my career, I've been a AAA developer, but I've loved pretty much the games that I've grown up with, which are now retro games. And I had the opportunity to jump ship from AAA gaming and move into something I really love, which is more retro gaming.
Absolutely. And you've got a YouTube channel, which is where your retro love is, I guess.
It is, yep. So it's strange. Being in the AAA games industry, you think there'd be a ton of people that are into games and old games, but they're very few. I think in my 2K studio, there were about 300 people, and two people liked retro gaming.
Wow.
I set up a YouTube channel to really connect with other people in the community, and it's been great for that.
You're allowed to promote it, Mike.
Thank you. It's the Retro Gamer Boy Show, if anyone wants to check it out.
And you have an immense collection of games. And you know what? I said this to you pre-show as well. To see, I guess let me start with where we felt Antstream was as a team, you know, the podcast boys. And when you first launched, and obviously you weren't part of it then, we honestly felt like it was a little bit of a damp script. Do you know what I mean? It was, it promised a lot. Kind of the Netflix of gaming and Netflix of retro gaming, that is. And it had this promise of a platform where there will be tons of games, community, and so on and so forth. And we all felt it just sort of launched with not so much of a fizzle. You know, fast forward, and that's not me being negative. I just fast forward to now, seeing the likes of yourself come on board. And, you know, I did my LinkedIn stalking of you and, you know, found that you come from this background. And suddenly it opens up this corporation where you could potentially see it as slightly faceless from an outsider's point of view to, hold on a minute, you've got real retro passion now in the team. And I think that opens my heart and hopefully the listener's heart to the platform further, because actually, you know what, it's not just a business trying to make money. Of course, you're a business. You've got shareholders. You've got people you need to pay in salaries. But at the same time, there's still passion within that company. And if you found that coming on board, that the culture is of passion as well?
Yeah, I mean, the people that make up Antstream love retro gaming. I mean, we've got some guys. I thought I knew a lot about my classic gaming history. We got some guys in there that are quoting facts and breaking down games that I had no idea existed or were even possible. So there are some very, very diehard retro gamers at Antstream. And, you know, they're very keen to bring not only retro gaming to mass audiences, but it's almost like building out the ultimate companion app for retro gamers.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. absolutely appreciate people love their physical collections. I'm a testament to physical collections, but at the same time, being able to just be exposed to the so many games that I just, you know, wouldn't be able to afford, that don't exist anymore, is amazing.
And that's the point. You know, we've discussed it. We've done episodes on emulation and preservation, and, you know, it's been told a million times in the retro community that ROMs, for want of a better phrase, are, you know, they're a grey area, but at the same time, they're preserving the history. And, you know, AntStream has this opportunity, and not just opportunity, you're somewhat doing it already, of preserving gaming history with a community wrapped around it. A nice, you know, front end layer, which makes it so easy just to get in and play a game.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're providing a service as much as anyone in this scene to retro gaming, and again, to hear that passion within the organization is nice to see. I think you're being a little bit modest on your previous achievements as well, Mike. BAFTA award winner and member. Make you blush now, hopefully.
I don't like to talk about those sort of things, but yes, I've done a couple of big things in my career, which was, you know, bit of luck, a bit of fortune.
We all need a bit of that.
You know, I really, being part of AntStream now really helps me pull on those things. So, you know, people who are new to AntStream or long time, you know, players of AntStream, the next 3-4 months, I guarantee you are going to blow you away. I've sat down with the team, looked at what needs to be done, and we're going to be making some brilliant changes that, you know, people in the retro gaming community and on any gaming platform, what you'd expect to have on a gaming platform, and other stuff is completely brand new that you had never seen on a gaming platform before.
And is this, sorry, Matt, I can't tell you what that is just yet, or could you allude to us what that could be?
We're tactically leaking stuff on our Discord.
I'm glad you're admitting it.
Yeah. So the good thing is that people aren't going to have to wait long. You know, before you'd have to wait a year to hear much, and that's because the team have been working on a lot of back end stuff. It's some complex tech they're working on, but you know, within weeks you'll hear something, and then a week after that you'll hear something, and I think you're going to see a stream of different bits and pieces coming out about AntStream that are going to really excite the community.
Yeah, and you know, delving back into AntStream, I mean, like I said, we tested it out a couple of years ago, and yeah, we felt it had potential, just it wasn't there yet. And you know, that's being frank about it. And you know, using it more recently, the thing that got me most sort of pulled into its charms is the competitions. The one at the weekend, England v Italy on Sensible Soccer, which I ended up 19th, which surprised me actually.
That's brilliant.
Wasn't out of 20, it was out of a few hundred. So, you know, I'm quite sure it's a lucky penalty. Let's put it that way. It was a very lucky penalty.
I scored no goals and lost 8-0.
Yeah, my first game was something along that lines, and like, that second game was pure chance that I got hacked down in the box. So, you know, I'll take the penalty if I can get there. But it's those competitions that sort of, I guess, is drawing in the community, because we are going to touch on multiplayer in a bit. At the moment, competitions is where it's at, and you've got your community on Discord. I'm openly not. I can't stand Discord, Mike. I really can't. It's obviously a really good place to engage your community, but if you're not on there all the time, we've got a really active Discord community, and you miss it for more than a couple of hours and you're way behind. And it's like those old IRC days, back in the day when I had my Amiga and I could go on all day long because I had no job and no schooling and nothing else. But, you know, you have to keep up. But I can see why Discord's a massive thing. But those competitions are really what's drawing me in, and those ones where you dive straight into a game, like the one at the weekend on Sensible Soccer, you know, straight in, quickest to score a goal against Italy. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to know, how do you manipulate the emulation layer to make that happen? So as soon as I scored a goal, that was it. The game was over, and my score's in the high score table. And I find that really clever.
Yeah. So there's a lot of back engineering we do on the actual ROM. So every single game that you play on AntStream, we've licensed, which is really important for us because a lot of people think of, hey, I don't know, Capcom, Kai and Army, or Nintendo, they own all of these games and the ROMs, and you know, they're being very corporate around it. A lot of these retro gamers are in the hands of private collectors now. They spend out a lot of money to get these ROMs to preserve them.
And
by licensing them, we're able to kind of give these guys some money back in their pocket. But what we do is we actually take the ROM and we back engineer it. So part of our licensing deal is that we can back engineer these games. So we, for all intents and purposes, have retro gaming hackers on the team who go in, they look at the original code and they see what sort of data points they can pull out of it, what sort of information we can grab from it so that we can make a game out of it. That can be anything from, can we change the character to a different sprite, or can we do it so you've got a limited amount of health? Anything that we think that we can put out, we try to put out. And then we sit down and figure out what would be a fun challenge to put around this work that we've done. And yeah, and it comes out as you literally have these like 30-second challenges where it will be, Star Wars, shoot down as many TIEs as you can within 30 seconds. And it just makes it a lot more exciting, right? We've got so little time nowadays, and these retro games often require you to kind of sit down and play for a full hour if you wanted to complete it. And it also, exposes you to games that you wouldn't normally kind of touch. So I've always been scared of shmups. Love them, but scared of them. But the challenges really got me back into those again, because I got 30 seconds like, wow, this is so fun to play. But yeah, they're really a jewel in the crown of at Antstream.
So that's really interesting. One around the licensing. So I didn't know that, people have bought up the IPs to these ROMs, essentially. So that's really good. Do you have a team of people that are actively seeking out IP to license?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I don't think this is a secret, but we've started to look at indie devs.
It's not anymore.
No, it's not anymore. huge leak coming.
Yeah.
So a lot of what I do on my YouTube channel is I like exposing and bringing to the forefront developers that create new games for old consoles. And so I've spoken to a number of these guys, and we're actively talking to new developers who are creating brand new games for these old consoles and allowing them to kind of publish on Antstream as well.
Sure.
So there's that kind of thing as well that we bring to the platform.
Yeah. And do you have people coming, or, license holders coming to you now, or are you very much still seeking it out?
It really depends on the size of the developers. The bigger boys, they've got so many people coming to them, they actively don't go looking. But definitely the smaller studios, individuals, indies, are very interested. In the last 6 months, Antstream's gained a lot of traction. Our emulation is spot on now, the streaming is so much better. And the feature roadmap that we've got for the next 6 months alone have got publishers really excited about having their games on the service.
I mean, looking down the games list, you can see the usual players in there. If I look at the C64 Mini and the C64 that come out, in the last few years, Houston are clearly actively licensing out their old games. And you can see that on your platform as well. But, one of the attractions for me is, I mean, let's get down to brass tacks that, it's easy for people to emulate these days. And I want to know how you think Antstream can pull in the likes of, I'll put myself in that bracket initially of, I can set up an emulator quite easily. And, I hope I'm not sort of treading on dangerous ground here, that I can chuck a load of ROMs in and play it. It's great. I tend to stick to the same old ROMs every time. So everything I put ROMs on, it's the same 15, 20 per system and so on. For Antstream, what I found is, yeah, I remember that game. It wouldn't be the kind of game I'd put into an emulator. So suddenly it's opening up these other games to me in a very, very easy fashion to get into. And this is where I'm sort of trying to steer people away from. It's not just emulation. It's more than that with the competitions and the layer you're using. And it's imagination. You're licensing games that other people may not think, unless you've got full ROM sets. And frankly, I don't think they're the kind of people you're probably targeting, to be honest with you. I guess you're targeting the more casual retro gamer who just wants an easy way to play it. And correct me if I'm wrong here.
No, I think that's spot on, right? With this service, we're not trying to get rid of anything. we're not trying to, if you collect physical stuff, we're not trying to say, hey, don't do that, do this. Yeah. Or you know, if you've got a big ROM collection, don't delete that, do this, right? Mm. But I think you're right. AntStream allows for discoverability because there are millions of games out there. Mm. And, you know, our hope is that one day those millions of games all sit on AntStream. And we're able to kind of surface them to you. And again, it's the little things that we do, like the challenges. There's so many games that I've discovered that are now some of my favorite games ever because I played the challenge on AntStream and I never would have touched the game before.
Exactly.
Because I had no idea about it. And having been exposed to 30 seconds of it in a fun way, I've then gone back and played it completely.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the catalog and what we do with that catalog is something that's very unique and special about AntStream. Mm.
And where are you in terms of numbers of games on the platform at the moment?
So I think we're 1,400, but okay. we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of more licensed.
Okay,
it's just finding time to be able to get all of them onto the platform because, like I said, we kind of back engineer them, want to build in challenges. We got to do tests on them to make sure that they run optimally.
Plus, there's probably the button mapping for controllers is a more simple task you probably got. Yeah,
trivia. So you know, if you go on to, you find out the trivia. There's some really cool stuff on there. I even like the icons that tell us that what year something's released, who released it.
Yeah.
But you can actually go into the actual trivia, and there's games. The games have got trivia about them. You know, stuff you wouldn't have known about the games is on there as well. So the whole ingestion process of bringing in a game is quite complex. But you can see it's like week in, week out, new games, new games, new games, new games.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, I got a question from one of our listeners actually, and I think it's really good. And if you use this and didn't think of it before, then credit him for it because I think it's brilliant. So using my example of just last week, I wanted to play Operation Wolf. It popped into my head. There was a particular day that felt like an atmosphere from a day when I was a kid, and I played it around a mate's house, shout to Matthew Bartlett, on his Commodore 64, and I really wanted to play a Commodore 64 version, and I've got it on a Commodore 64 emulator. I thought I'll try AntStream, and obviously you've got the arcade version. But the question from Trantonator on our Discord, he said, are you planning to license arcade conversions as well, and then you could switch between them within the client?
So switching between is something we haven't got. But that is a great idea. I love some of the remakes of old games that allow you to switch between those.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. We do have within AntStream games that span multiple platforms.
Okay. Yeah.
And again, there's probably only a small percentage of people that will ever utilize that, but we really like the idea of, hey, I can play the arcade version, I can play the N64 version, I could play the Mega Drive version, I could play the Master System version of the game.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really interesting. We did a episode on arcade conversions years back, and it was the other boys persuaded me because I said, in this day of emulation, and you know, it's probably pre AntStream days, but in this day of emulation, why would you want to play anything other than the arcade version? And I got persuaded into it, saying, well, actually, it's really nice to see how the developers converted those games and how they sort of translated down to 8-bit, 16-bit, and so on. So I think that would be really good comparison there, if it's not live switching, because I you know, I can think of R-Type on the Switch where you can switch between the graphics instantly and so on. I don't think the live switching is necessarily a thing, but if you had, let's use Operation Wolf as an example, arcade, C64, Spectrum, Amstrad, Amiga, for instance, I think it'd be a really wonderful thing, and you could package, I'm giving you ideas here, package that up into a nice little bundle, go, right, this week's bundle is Operation Wolf, and we've got every possible version of it. And I think it would be a great idea, and like you say, people like to see what things are like on different platforms, and it's good to see. I noticed last night I just happened across CJ's Elephant Antics, which I had on the Commodore 64 way back in the day, which is dated very badly, in fact. But I can see you got the Spectrum, and I think it was the Amstrad version on there as well, so I think it's a great place to check out the differences between them. Definitely.
Yeah.
So you say you've got thousands sitting in your kind of back pocket. You know, are these just going to dribble out, or do you think there'll be a time where it'll ramp up so it's coming out a lot quicker?
Possibly it'll ramp up. I think because there's so many coming out on a rate, it's impossible to keep up with it. You know, we had God and Operation Wolf come out just a couple of weeks ago. And you know, two big games there, just playing Gods alone is, it could take up a week, easily there. So, I think it depends, how things go and what the appetite is for new games. We'll keep on releasing them weekly. Some we may even bump ahead of others, especially if there's a lot of demand for them. You know, the more successful AntStream comes, the more people that, that play it, the more money we can spend on people to turn these games into things that you can play on the platform.
Yeah. And how, what is your active subscriber sort of numbers at the moment?
I don't think I'm allowed to say that.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think I said, but I, you know, 20. It's going to be, what can I say? I can't. by the end of the year, it's going to be a very big platform in terms of number of people playing significantly.
So that turns the conversation, and I'll come off that really quickly for you. Turns the conversation to multiplayer. So this is one area, you know, a number of our listeners have said, what's going on with, you know, online multiplayer? Nothing's there at the moment, is it? You've got multiplayer games, but not multiplayer over the internet, essentially.
Yes, nothing that you've got access to.
Ah, okay. So you're opening the can of worms there that actually it should be coming.
Yeah, so there's a bit of tech that we're working on that will make it possible.
Okay.
When we release that, though, I'm not sure. My hope is that we get something out by the end of the year.
Because I think that that suddenly becomes, because the USP right now, obviously tons of games, competitions are great, and I'm surprised by how much I like the competitions, because I'm not usually that, I'm a terrible game player, Mike, so I generally don't get involved in competitions. But suddenly when you see your name on a high scoreboard, you go, oh, okay, I can climb up. And it reminded me that this sort of competitiveness in me reminded me of a really old time in a caravan park. Outrun was my favorite game at the time. And there was someone else in the caravan park or chalet park that was better than me. John, his name was. Or John was his initials anyway. If you're out there, John, I'm after you. Because I couldn't beat him. I was always second throughout my whole week. And I didn't have a lot of money because we weren't, you know, a massively well-off family. So I'd be packed off for maybe 50p, which might get you three or four goes back in the day. And I couldn't beat John. And I feel like that's coming out in me again. And I think that's a really good thing. But multiplayer, suddenly it just opens up this world of, and you know, sadly you didn't get it out sort of a year ago because it would have been just fantastic, wouldn't it, during the last year in a pandemic. I think it would have brought a lot of people together, but that does not say it wouldn't do it again. So I think that will be a massive thing for getting more subscribers and just having this much more unique proposition. I can imagine it's got challenges from an emulation point of view.
Yeah, there's some small technical challenges.
Okay.
I think it's a lot of the work, though, is around interface, syncing people up at the right time, sending out requests. You know, there's the things that we take for granted in any kind of gaming platform. You know, it's like, oh, I want to play you, and you press these buttons, and then suddenly you're playing. That process of pressing all those buttons, building in error checking, all that kind of back end boring stuff that we have to deal with, it still needs to be worked out. So it's something that is on our roadmap, and really? I'm hoping to bring it in sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was John Hare said it. I mean, I interviewed John Hare many, many moons ago. Might have been that interview, but I've definitely heard him saying when people were talking about when he re-released Speedball 2 on whatever platform it was, and it wasn't online multiplayer. And he sort of alluded to the fact that, you know, 2D gaming is a whole different kettle of fish to 3D games, which have, I guess, some kind of latency already built into the controls. It doesn't have to be so quick to respond, the 3D game. Driving game's slightly different, I guess, in that sense. But when you're 2D Twitch gaming, if your input is not there instantly, you feel it and your brain doesn't like it. And I think that's the challenge you've got, isn't it? To, like you say, make those handshakes happen at the right time. And
And then people on different connection speeds. Yeah. So, and some of this you can't avoid, right? You'll find this on any multiplayer game, no matter how good the tech behind it at the moment. You know, if you're playing a first person shooter, if someone's got, you know, the lag is slightly in their favor, they'll do better. So it's a thing the whole games industry is working over. But the good thing about the games industry is, you know, go back just 15 years ago, and what we're doing now was impossible.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, that you know, if you were saying to people, hey, you won't even need a console, you could just play all your games on your TV without any hardware, impossible. Mm. So for me, when we talk about lag, multiplayer, all this stuff, give us guys in the games industry a few more years and we'll have it solved, and it'll be indistinguishable from you having a console.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming on to the streaming, so obviously you, well, not obviously, for people who don't know, you stream these games across our internet connection, basically, into the client, don't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
So it's not, you're not downloading a ROM to client side, you are actually streaming the graphics and, you know, inputs, sound, etc. across.
Yep, it's all being beamed to you, which allows us to operate globally. And you know, the tech behind it's quite clever. It's kind of similar to what Stadia is doing. The big difference for us, though, is these big companies, PlayStation, Xbox, Stadia, they're trying to push some really high end games. So they, you know, the machines they're having to host these games on have epic graphics cards in there. Mm. Whereas, to be honest, with retro games, you don't even need a graphics card, which means that our latency is a lot lower. Compared to when you play on these high-end pieces of machine, and you know, the amount of data we're using is a lot lower. So the experience, you know, bizarrely enough, on a small company for like AntStream, the streaming experience we offer is better than something that Google can currently offer. Mm. And again, it's just because we've chosen to go with classic games rather than try compete with the likes of Xbox and Sony and push out some of these behemoth games that we have nowadays.
Yeah, so in my experience with it, I won't say I didn't feel some lag. Occasionally I did. I'm very perceptive to controller lag. Mm. And I've got to say, the vast majority of the time, it is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, I've used emulators which are poor, and sometimes it's not just controller lag, it's the lag between visual and sound as well. I remember when, again, coming back to that C64 Mini, when that first came out, there was loads of videos on YouTube showing you the lag between how many frames it was before the sound played. And you can feel it. You can genuinely feel it in that emulation layer. And that's something I've been very perceptible to. And I don't perceive it in AntStream. Occasionally I've had stutters from be it your end or my end, and I don't think there'll ever be an answer to whether it was my end or your end, because, you know, fiber broadband, but I know I can sit at home at work and you know, my laptop will drop its VPN all day long, so I know it could be my end, it could be your end. The vast majority of the time you don't see it. When you do see the streaming artifacts is on a busy graphical screen, Metal Slug for instance, you know, when there's lots of explosions going on, you can start seeing the compression artifacts. Is that is that something you aim to improve, or is this, are you at sort of the limit of that's kind of it now?
No, this is you know, this is an emerging tech, streaming games. I mean, the reality is that 5-10 years from now, all games will probably be streamed. You know, we're no different from film or music. All the mass market's going there. And like I said, over the course of the next few years, you're going to see this technology just improve and improve and improve. And there's going to be a day in the very distant, very near future. Sorry, where we're going to see this being indistinguishable from where we're playing on consoles. And that's, you know, whether that's AntStream that makes that breakthrough or Sony that makes that breakthrough, it's going to come. And, you know, all these streaming services will benefit from that jump in quality. But if you just look at if people were around playing AntStream when it first came out, and I was there playing it, I was kind of like, oh, this breaks up a lot and it's dropping a lot. And then you look at it compared to, you know, just over a year and how much it's improved. There's just no way that we're not going to continually see improvements to that, where you just won't be able to tell the difference.
I mean, it kind of lives or dies by that, doesn't it? You know, if there's input lag, if there's glitching, if there's stutters, then the vast majority of the time, it's not going to win as a platform, is it? But if you can, and well, if you can, I don't think that's right for me to say that. You pretty much have nailed it. I think in my time of my few hours, you know, really digging into it and sort of criticizing, you know, not just playing for enjoyment, actually going, right, what can I nitpick with this for the interview? Very little I could nitpick. I'd say from the emulation side, I'm very keen on silky smooth scrolling and sprites moving, and I it doesn't seem to have that. And I don't know whether that's client side my computer or refresh rates of monitors. I've never quite understood that. I know that other emulators have nailed it, and you know, you can get silky smooth scrolling all the time. That's the only thing I can really criticize with it. In terms of controller input, brilliant. I've never felt it, other than I can feel the whole thing was lagging at a particular point in time, and that's when I felt the controller lag as well, and that's kind of understandable. My wife was probably streaming Love Island or something like that downstairs, so you know that's probably what caused it. But overall, I think as a platform now, again, like you say, when you played it right at the start, it just didn't feel quite right. It is 95, even more than 95% nailed in that sense. I think with a little bit more finesse, like with that smoothness, and again, I don't know whether that's me or you guys that need to deal with that. Not me personally, but my setup. that would just, it's kind of like cherry on the cake stuff, you know, to really make it, I don't need to set up my hardware anymore because there's Antstream there.
And that's, I think, you know, to be honest, that's something that you really want the platform to solve for you, right? You just want to be able to plug and play and off you go. So again, those improvements will happen over the next few years. And you'll get that silky smoothness in the scrolling starting to appear in the games that you play. So again, I think at the moment it's, for some people that are, you know, pixel perfect, this has got to be 100%. Antstream, I would say, is your companion app. You want to dive in, you want to take on some challenges, you want to set some high scores, and then you'll probably go back and do your hardcore playing outside of it. But give it another year or two, and you probably won't be able to tell the difference. Then at that point, it becomes something very interesting. So I've got an arcade cab. I have Antstream on the arcade cab, and I've pretty much moved away completely to having ROMs on there, to just streaming Antstream on there. You know, I've got one or two games on there that we don't have on the service, but I think, you know, for a lot of retro gamers, it could be a great complement to their collection to have a service that has all of these games, challenges, high scores, but running as they would expect it to on original hardware.
And I think it's important that you recognize, and you have done throughout the whole of this interview, that there are ROMs out there, and it's very easy to get these. And actually, in terms of competing, I don't feel like you're trying to do that, but you're trying to provide a service that gives people the ultimate choice of, you don't really need to look for ROMs online anymore. We've got stacks for you here, why not come and try us? And the fact that, you know, you as a YouTuber, retro game fanatic, been in the industry, you know, you have ROMs, let's say that, and you know, it's this massive gray area, I think is really really healthy as a discussion within your organization, that, you know what, there are people out there that have these, how do we drag them in? And for me, as someone who has some of that, I'm not a full ROM set person at all, because I don't have the time to pay those kind of games, you know, work for a living. I have hobbies, other hobbies. And, you know, I wouldn't say I have a life particularly anymore, certainly not in the last year, but, you know, there is a life there as well. You know, I want to dive in and play games quickly, coming back to those competitions. Brilliant. But it's really enabled me to do that, playing around on Antstream in the last couple of months. And it's made me, maybe the worm is turning, and I think that's good. Do you know from, I don't know, from your community or surveying people, whether it's more casual type gamers, you know, the kind of folk that would buy the mini consoles, you just want a quick way to play some games. Is it mainly that, or are you dragging in the more purists?
To be honest, it's more purist, and what we're trying to do is bring in more casual. So, you know, that people that are into emulation, they will probably always live in emulation. There's something else that gives them a kick, right? It's keeping that set up to date. It's working on the emulators. So, you know, those people they're still interested. And we have a couple of people that are, you know, they come in and they're interested because they're interested in the tech behind it.
Okay.
But the gamers we have on the platform are collectors like myself, who have, you know, big physical collections. They're people that love retro gaming. But we are finding that there are more and more casual people coming in, who basically go, I've never played a retro game. And actually, this is quite fun. I've got, you know, 30 seconds of this, and they just live in the challenges. They never, they never play the full games. And then we've got others that, you know, retro gaming is becoming more expensive. They don't want to go in and do all the emulation stuff. It's too, that's too scary or time consuming, you know, downloading a ROM. Oh, it doesn't work. It's missing the, you know, your CHD file. that, you know, they just cannot be bothered with
thing
that.
Thing of nightmares.
yeah. And actually just want to be able to plug and play their old games. So at the moment it's a mix. I'd say like there are more retro gamers, which I think, you know, it's odd, you wouldn't expect that, but at the same time you would expect it because they're the first people to adopt anything retro gamey. Would be those kind of more diehard retro gamers. But as our audience expands, we do find that there's a lot more people coming in that also want the casual experience as well.
That's great. And one thing that sort of struck me there was I would expect the more purists to have a particular controller they like. I mean, I tried the other night with an old Zipstick, you know, the old Zipstick joysticks, because I've got an adapter for a Zipstick, and it worked other than fire button. So is there going to be a future where you can do controller mappings yourself to you know, because I can see a lot of people have their favorite arcade stick or their favorite joystick like me or their favorite joypad. I don't really want to play with a PS3 or 4 or 5 joypad, for instance. I want to either play with an old SNES, you know, one that's, you know, up to date, for instance, which works lovely at the moment. Or, like I say, my old Zipstick. I'd love to get that working on it for Amiga games, if nothing else.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're doing a grand job of predicting the next three to 6 months for me here. Yes. Controlling mapping is
definitely... Mike. Sorry.
it's absolutely on the roadmap. There's other things that are going to come out before then, but that is something that we're bringing in. Again, it's a little bit more complex because we then have to... we have all these screens that pop up that show you the controls and what certain buttons do. So it's coming up with this system that systemically recognizes your pad, allows you to change the buttons, and then we have to kind of change some of the interface stuff. But work's ongoing to bring that into the platform.
And I think from your side, it's got to be around that user experience as well, isn't it? Suddenly you're making it more complex. For me, it's that I can just get into a game in three clicks kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? And if suddenly I'm having to remap controllers, it makes your user interface way more complex, doesn't it? So you've got to have that balancing act.
Yeah, but again, you know, our audience is a mixture of purists and people that are casual. And I think, you know, we built a easy to enter platform first. So we take care of a lot of the controller stuff for you so that you don't have to worry about it.
Absolutely.
But equally, we know, we recognize there are people that just want, hey, I want to play Zero Tolerance on the Mega Drive, and I really want to do it with my three button joypad through a USB converter, right? So we'll allow you to do that, and you know, we'll bring in that that mapping. And I think that's great because it allows, you know, I think it talks to the fact that AntStream is also that companion, you know, the greatest, I call it the greatest companion app for retro gamers. You know, the more of this stuff that we bring in that allows you to experience the games that you love the way you want to, just makes the platform stronger.
And further to that as well, I mean, the trivia is a really good piece, which adds to that experience as well. When you want to know a bit about your old games, I'd love to see more cover artwork and, you know, some of the some of the emulation layers. Now you can put videos on as well, can't you? So you can see a bit of the gameplay. Now, I appreciate that would probably make your client a bit too rich, possibly, in terms of size, because it's very quick and snappy now, and you don't want to lose that. Certainly not.
Yeah, and internally, we've had, you know, we had a chat a couple of weeks ago. About maybe there's an opportunity to kind of do the AntStream Museum in the app, where, you know, you can jump into it and look at you know, gaming's past history. So there's nothing on the roadmap yet for that kind of thing, but it's definitely something that quite a few people in the company are keen to explore. You know, is, can we expand it beyond just games? You know, can there be some kind of trivia in there? Is there a museum, virtual museum, that we could bring to the app?
So what is your specific role in AntStream? What have you been brought on to do? And what attracted you to it as well?
So my role is pretty broad. So my past history is building studios. So the Sony studio, London studio, I helped build that out. The Xbox studio I built from scratch. The Ubisoft partner studio I built up. And then the 2K studio I built pretty much from scratch. So my role is at the moment I'm coming in. I'm trying to get the team on track. Build out a feature set, improve the product, make changes to how we operate, and pretty much get us on a course that means that, you know, every month you guys can expect the platform to just get visibly better. Mm-hmm. You know, new features, better navigation, better support, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of helping build that out. And then what attracted it? Me to it. I think, again, I've been doing AAA gaming for so long. I did games like For Honor, Mafia Definitive Edition, The Getaway, SingStar, PlayStation Home. I created the PlayStation Trophy System. And I think I just got to a point where, like, yeah, it's okay. You know, a lot of people think you won't get bored of the games industry, but, you know, if you do it for 20 years, there's bits that become similar, and I'm not getting any younger. Steve, who's the CEO of Antstream, kept on basically pestering me for the last year and a half to come and have a chat with him. I got to a point where I was like, do you know what? I finished making games in the day, and then I sit in my games room and I play old games.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind actually sitting and making the platforms for these old games, and then playing old games as well. So it's allowed me to take my hobby and make it my life.
Yeah, yeah. Is that mixing business and pleasure a bit too much though?
No, my wife knows exactly what she married.
So she never sees you then?
No, she never sees me. And she's used to conversations where I just go on for hours about how, you know, oh, I've just picked up Pirates of Dark Water and it's expensive because of this, and I like it because of this. I think she just switches off, but
they do generally, the wives, I think.
They
humor us to a certain point.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Coming back to competitions quickly, so you know, I have this romantic view of Antstream meetings. Okay, you know, you sit down and go, oh, what competitions should we put together now? And then you just sit down, play some games together, obviously pre-post pandemic, whatever you want to call it, and make up some competitions on the spot? Or is it, do you have a team doing that, or is it open to ideas from anyone and everyone in the business?
No, it's pretty much that. In fact, we've just introduced something that starts this Friday. It's not secret. We're doing something called Let's Play, where we get a load of games, we split off into groups, we play them, and we go, right, what sort of things do we want to make around these? What kind of challenges or tournaments do we want to make? And it really just gets everyone involved. And it's such a cool thing to be able to do. It's like, hey, let's sit down and play Operation Wolf for 45 minutes and come up with ways we can hack it to make a challenge or a tournament out of it. It's a brilliant part of the day to be able to kind of just sit down and do that. It's, you know, for me, the one thing that I've leaned on a lot in my games career is diversity of ideas. You know, I can sit down and have an idea about a game. You and me can sit down and we'll come up with 10 ideas about a game. And that's exactly what we do at Antstream as well, is we use that diversity that we have within the studio. And we use it to help us create challenges and tournaments and just general ideas. In fact, the football challenge that just went out, the Sensible Soccer one, we did that while we were all sit down. We had an offsite. We all sit down watching the football and we're like, hang on a minute. Could we actually put out a challenge now and have it up for the community within 24 hours, something we'd never done before? And we're like, yeah, let's give it a shot. So that challenge was turned around in super fast time. And it came from the team just kind of going, hey, this sounds like it would be a good idea.
Do you have any interaction with the original developers where they're still available? You know, thinking Sensible Software, you know, John Hare is still very much active. Or is it purely your guys are hacking around in the ROMs and disk images?
Some of them absolutely are involved. I don't think I can say who some of them are, but some of them are involved.
Yeah.
Not for every game. I'd say it's definitely the a very, very small proportion of this. What we are finding, though, as we kind of bring in some more indie developers who are making new games for classic consoles, those guys are more interested and more engaged because they're around. You know, a lot of people have moved on from the games that they made 20, 30 years ago. Some of them probably have forgotten how to code now.
Yeah.
And crazy enough, are starting to retire.
Absolutely.
So it's mainly our guys that do a lot of the hacking.
There's another point there as well, that some of those people who were around back in the day, you know, they might have such bad memories of this, they don't want it being dragged up again, do they? You know, they might have had such a fallout with a publisher or a software team that they went, right, I'm leaving the industry for a damn good reason, I never want to drag that up again.
One of our founders, he's I won't say who it is or what game it is, but he worked on a game, and then the publisher, through spite, didn't credit him on the game.
Wow.
And it's a pretty massive game for 16-bit consoles. So you, as games developers, we all have scars. So yeah, I'm sure there's a couple there that you know, if we asked them, they'd probably stab us in the eye or something.
That's right. Luckily, you probably don't have to deal with too much of that in the licensing side of it.
No, yeah. we send them out, they're the front line.
That's right. Monetization.
Mm-hmm.
So it's free for a year, is that right?
No, so it's free completely now.
Okay, so how does that work?
So what we're looking at is more of a Spotify model. So we are going to have subscriptions. We still do have subscriptions. However, you can go on there now and play it for free. You don't have to subscribe at all. And that's because we're going to be bringing on a like a free-to-play advertising thing. So essentially how it will work is that we have this currency in the game already, which is gems. Yeah. And what we use gems for is mainly you can bet against each other. And you can use it to unlock challenges. They're relatively easy to get hold of. So we're trying to now build in a system where if you run out of gems, you can watch an ad and the ad gives you some more gems. And we're just going to have it so that you'll need a number of gems to play a game.
Right, okay.
And it won't be play a game, I die, oh, I need more gems. It will literally be, okay, if I want to play Mortal Kombat for the entire day, you know, I'll watch an ad, I'll get enough gems, I'll put it in, and then I can play Mortal Kombat for the entire day.
Okay.
So that's how we're going to run the model. Our hope is, though, that people see enough value as we build out new features, expand the catalog, they'll see value in being able to subscribe to the service. But again, it's just like Spotify, you know, there's probably more people that are interested in the free stuff and are happy to put up with a 30-second, 10-second ad to be able to listen to the music they want. It will be something similar to that.
And I was thinking about, you know, could subs hit, you know, I know you can't talk numbers here, but will they continue growing, or is there a ceiling with this kind of thing? You know, are you going to hit, I'm going to throw a number out here, it's probably nowhere near the truth, let's say 20,000 is a realistic goal for a year. You know, music will obviously just keep bringing more and more and more and more people in. Gaming or retro gaming has probably a finite limit, doesn't it? So do you see that there will be a ceiling for this so-called ceiling, and then it will just kind of plateau there, or do you see this just grow?
Yeah, you know, if Antstream's still around in 40 years time, you'll be playing those retro PS4 games. So you know, there's so many games, and they continue, you know, just like music, they continue getting played, and they have new audiences. So one of the things we're looking at is bringing in the Gen 5 consoles. And you know, there's a whole younger audience out there that consider those retro because they weren't even alive when those consoles were there. So I think you know, retro will mean something to different people on this platform. For some people, they'll be like, we got modern games like PlayStation games, where others will consider those retro games. And Christ knows what, you know, the people that think PlayStation 2, if that's retro, what they think of an old Atari game or a Commodore 64 game.
Hell of a can of a worms with that discussion.
Yes, I know. Yeah. So, you know, our hope is that as we go along, we're able to just build this catalog. And it's not about it's the latest game. It's like, this is where you go to play any game. In the history of games, right? I think we'll always be generation, you know, two, three generations behind where gaming is, but we want to be able to eventually just grow this catalog. So, you know, you loved playing on the GameCube. Well, the GameCube catalog's on Antstream.
Yeah. Do you see difficulties with certain platforms and licensing the games though? And I'm thinking probably something like the GameCube where it's kind of nailed down by Nintendo because of their virtual console and whatever plans they have for that.
Yeah, and it's Nintendo are pretty much the only one. And mainly their first party. You can go on now to Antstream and play Super Star Wars on the SNES.
Yeah.
You can play SNES game. Yeah. So it's mainly first party Nintendo. Probably first party PlayStation, although we haven't done anything with PlayStation and Xbox. Those first-party companies will be harder because they own a platform. And, of course, they'll want to be able to push their platform. And Nintendo, if you've been playing games for any length of time, you know that Nintendo live and die off of their first party.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's unlikely. I won't say impossible, but it's very unlikely that you'll see Mario come to the platform. But I doubt you'll see Mario come to any other platform apart from Nintendo.
Yeah, true. But I guess there's also the indie games. There's a massive scene there where, you know, they're generally owned by more bedroom coders still, that kind of thing. I know a lot of the studios get bought up eventually, but there's obviously still more and more. And I hadn't thought about that when I asked the question of actually, do you know what, retro is an ever-growing thing because of, you know, no doubt you'll get into trouble with some people at some point for saying the GameCube's retro, but put that aside because, again,
I'm not saying that, just so I don't get the hate comments. I'm not saying that, but at some point in time there will be someone who's playing on the new cloud PlayStation 30 service.
Yes.
And they'll look at that and go, wow, I can't even see what's happening on screen on that GameCube game.
So as Mike, not as Antstream, what do you think's retro? Where does it go up to?
Oh, dear God.
And these views do not represent your company at all.
Where do I think it goes?
You may get hate for this, Mike, so be careful.
Yeah. So I have two opinions. Personally, I think it kind of, for me, it goes up to maybe the Mega Drive, Mega CD.
Wow, you're early then, yes.
Yeah. Well, the problem is even then I look at it and I'm like, well, it wasn't that long ago when I was buying these games new.
Mm-hmm.
But I generally, when we're having the conversations, I go up to PlayStation 1.
Okay.
But I also kind of have another view, which is there's a lot of new guys and girls that are getting into classic and retro gaming. And, you know, for them, they look at PS2 stuff as being, you know, retro. And I can understand them saying that because, you know, some of the kids that I talk to weren't even born for PS2. And, you know, they're now, you know, teenagers, young adults that are playing modern games. And for them, it's like, well, I wasn't even born. And that's what graphics used to look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for them, absolutely that for them, it's a very retro thing.
Yeah.
Personally, I kind of go up to Mega Drive. I might push it up to PS1 for the sake of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And then there's also, is it retro or is it vintage? And that's the other conversation, you know. There's one train of thought that retro is anything that's modern but in a certain style, and actually vintage is all your old games. And we won't get to that conversation.
No, let's not do that. It could be another couple of hours talking about that and getting loads of people's backs up at the same time. So let's not go there. But I think, you know, coming back to Antstream as a platform, you know, you do suddenly have a kind of responsibility on your shoulders of preserving this history in a legal way, because there's something to be said for playing games that are licensed. And like you said right at the start, it's very important that these games are licensed and you're not, you know, because it would tarnish your name if you suddenly took a ROM that you didn't own and made a big deal about it, and suddenly the IP holder comes, you know, suing you. So I think as a preservation as well, you could be the preservation of this scene to a massive degree. And I think that's important as well. There's a lot of weight on the shoulders. So again, coming back to that possible, you know, the museum side of it, if that happens, that's a really, really great thing to grow your platform more and more. So, you know, from a personal point of view, I like something that's easy to get into. I don't have a lot of space at home because I have another hobby which takes up all my desk, music production. So it takes up all my desk. Oh. I've got synthesizers and all sorts of stuff hanging around me.
So you have no space in your house.
I have no space. And, you know, they compete. Come Christmas and come those autumn nights, I usually get a couple of systems out because I like playing on the real thing. When it feels like those old days of, you know, when you weren't allowed to go out anymore because it was too dark and the roads are dangerous, that sort of thing. So I have this competing sort of hobbies and space, and I think that's where something like Antstream really comes in, because I can dive in at any time, and like you say, eventually it will be no different to playing the real thing. Of course, there's always the romantic view that says, oh, it feels a bit better playing on the real thing, and you know, playing something on a CRT does look and feel different from a computer monitor, doesn't it, at the end of the day. That could be some place to go, couldn't it? CRT compatibility, if that's at all possible. A hardware dongle.
Yeah, so we do some, I think we did something that allowed us to do lower resolution rendering as well.
Okay.
Because there were some people that, like me, play it on an arcade cab, but have, I don't think quite CRT, but they go just one higher.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible. The cool thing that I like is some of these guys in the emulation scene that create these renderers that just make the screen look like a CRT. You know, I've looked at some things on an LCD screen and it looks like the screen's curving. It's just genius. So, you know, maybe in the future there's that option as well, where we bring in some post rendering on there to make it look even more authentic.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like that. I love chunky pixels, so I love the beauty of looking at pixel artwork really big, you know, shove it over a 49-inch screen, and I think it just looks beautiful. Whereas, you know, some of the other podcast hosts, they hate that and they want a, you know, a filter over it so it looks like scan lines or it's a bit blurred and so on. So I think that'd be really nice to bring into it at a future date. And then I'm romanticizing about how can I get that onto my CRT as well? Because that would be wonderful. Because I'm sat in my shed here next to a massive, I think it's a 28-inch CRT, which won't fit in the house and won't ever be allowed in the house either, Mike. So it's stuck out here in the shed, which is a shed. It's not a man cave. It's just a shed. But I have one system set up on the CRT and it's beautiful in that sense.
Yeah. And you know, I love... As a games developer, you always want to see your game in the best light. And actually, if I was developing these games back in the 80s and 90s, if I knew that I could get a device like an OSSC and play it on a resolution that people can play these games on now, I'd be like, yes, that's the only way I want you to play my game, is in super high resolution where you can see every single pixel glorious. So it's interesting. I think from a dev point of view, it's, if you use an OSSC or something like that on an LCD screen, that's probably, you know, the developer back in the day would have killed for their game to look that good.
Yeah.
But as gamers, we're like, well, I'd like a CRT. I want a CRT and go back there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I sniffed around one of the OSSCs for a while now, and I know Mads on the podcast, I know Chris has got one. Mads has got the Framemeister, you know, the posh Rolls-Royce version. Dean's, you know, totally CRT, and Steve's got a few CRT as well. So we've all got our differing setups and likes, and some are hardware, some don't mind emulation, and it's interesting. So it was interesting wanting you to come on the podcast, because I know there was sort of a divide within the hosts, and there's probably a divide amongst the listeners as well. And of course there'll be a divide everywhere, because you can't please everyone. But I hope what we've spoken about today warms people to the culture and the company a little bit more. Because I think when you know about that, like I said at the start, knowing there's passion like yourself there actually warms me to you as an organization more, and wants me to support that. It's like when you see good social interaction on social media from companies involved, be it, you know, music equipment or computer equipment, it kind of warms you to it, because it makes that company feel more open. You're a face rather than faceless. And, you know, I come into this before I knew your background, just feeling like Antstream was sort of, it's going to sound harsh saying faceless, but you were just an organization. You're there, you're there to make money at the end of the day. And that's what it's about. But actually throughout this, it just feels like there's so much passion in your business. What is the culture like at Antstream? I know it's quite hard probably for you with 5 months under your belt and probably not a lot of office working, but what is your culture there? Is it the relaxed, you know, hammocks, beanbags type thing, or a little bit more corporate?
Well, it's hard to tell because obviously we've all been on lockdown for a long time, but it's genuinely, we managed to get together for the first time last week. And it's talking retro games and drinking at the moment. Is you know, it literally could be me going to a retro gaming meetup somewhere. It's a group of people that are hugely passionate about these classic games, hugely passionate about creating a gaming service that complements your physical collection, is the way that you only play retro gaming. Is your companion app, you know, however you want to use it. They're really keen on bringing, you know, this retro gaming catalog that, you know, we've created over like 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have fun doing it. And, you know, we genuinely get excited when there's, you know, when Operation Wolf jumped on, everyone's like, "Ooh, Operation Wolf!" That's, you know, and people are jumping on there and playing it. Yeah, it's a very passionate group of people. And I think what I'd say is, you know, think about it when you and your mates, if you were sitting down now and you're going, what could we do in retro gaming? If we had to set something up and we wanted to do something, what would we want to do? That's essentially what's happened here. You know, and they're you know, on the bleeding edge of gaming with this cloud streaming service, but at the same time, just arcing back to, you know, the glory days of gaming.
I like that. So to finish off, for those people on the fence or on the wrong side of the fence, Mike, what would you, other than the fact that, you know, it's currently free to play and there's a stack of games on there, what would be the one or two things you would say to them, say, come on, give it a try?
I'd say go in, have a go at a challenge. Don't go search for your favorite game. Just go in, play a game, have a go at a challenge and see what you think. And I think, once you've played a challenge, suddenly it's very different for you, right? It's no longer a catalog of games that you're playing through. There's something that you can do with this game that you never could do before. So go in, play a challenge, and see what you think.
And I agree. And do not seek out your favorite game, because you can do that at any time, wherever you are, unless you genuinely want to get involved in a competition on it. Because then you can show your prowess in that game, hopefully. Anyway.
Yes.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thank you, Mike. That's been really informative. Like I say, I hope it's made people understand a little bit more, because, again, there would be lots of people on the fence of just seeing it as another emulation platform, but it's way more than that, I think. And I wish you all the luck with it as a service, as a platform. And, you know, you've got me on board, that's for sure.
Good.
any parting shot?
I wish I did, but I'm super keen to go play Game Ground on the Mega Drive at the moment, which has been staring at me for the last 2 weeks, but I've been so busy, I've not had a chance to get into it.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to let you do that. Sure you need to eat something first just to get the energy up for the evening?
No. I will live on pixels tonight.
That's a lovely diet. I like the sound of that. Well, Mike, thank you very much for joining us, and all the best.
Thank you very much.